Welcome to Inspiring Journeys. I'm Paul Stressner, and alongside me are the incredible Adriana Ferns and the unstoppable
Terry Nelson.
Hey everyone, it's Adriana here. From a challenging path to becoming a fitness instructor, I've learned that every step counts in the journey to better self.
Hey, what's up everyone? I'm Carrie Nelson, your obstacle course crushing adaptive athlete warrior, Spartan races, major marathons. I'm breaking barriers and redefining what's possible.
And I'm on a mission to run a 5K in every state, shining a spotlight on the charities that make a difference in each community. But on Inspiring Journeys, we're not just about conquering personal goals.
Our podcast is a celebration of resilience, determination, and the transformative power of personal growth. We'll be sharing stories of individuals who have faced challenges head on and emerged stronger.
Yeah, you know, life is a series of obstacles, and I've learned to turn them into stepping stones. Let's inspire others to do the same.
That's right. And it's not just about our awesome guest stories. It's about yours, too. We want to ignite that spark within you, encouraging every listener to embark on their unique and inspiring journey.
So get ready to lace up your shoes, break down those walls, and join us each week as we explore the extraordinary paths that lead to growth, triumph, and ultimately an inspiring life.
This is Inspiring Journeys. Let's run, climb, and soar together.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a brand new episode of Inspiring Journeys. This is going to be like a slightly different episode than usual. We're doing the Boston Marathon wrap-up as we have two of the Boston Marathon finishers with us today. So, well, I guess first I'll start off with my grateful list because we can still do that. And I'm grateful for my own personal development because growing up, well, even recently, I was always like really shy and, you know, I didn't really talk to people and everything. And this weekend, as we mentioned last week, I went to personal development, like mastermind class with Craig Siegel, and I was doing a lot of networking and met a lot of incredible people. There's a lot of people I already knew just from the Zooms, but it's like a totally different energy when you see them in person. And he had a couple of big speakers there. And it was fun. Like that's a talk and learn about these other people's inspiring journeys, and hopefully this will get us some future guests as well, because there were some really incredible people, so looking forward to bring them on. But yeah, I couldn't even imagine doing this a couple of years ago, so so I'm very happy about that. And then let's see, we'll go in the order of how I saw you guys in the Boston Marathon. So well, of course, we'll start with our co-host, podcaster partner, Kerry Nelson.
Hey. I am like so out of it today, by the way, guys. I'm coming off of a Boston cold from if I'm a little loopy today, that's why.
Did that happen last year?
Or yeah,
you got sidetracked.
I did last year. I got sick. I think part of it is just like the marathon like flu or whatever it is, like I usually get anyways after everything said and done, because I'm just like really putting my body through so much. But this year Liv ended up getting sick, so she got something from when she was hanging out at the finish line, and she got it 2 days before I did, and I was like, I'm gonna catch this, and sure enough, your system's like already depleted. So it was just like, oh, hello virus, how are you today? Like, let's give you a big warm hug. So I'm grateful for today. I'm grateful for heading back into OCR season. I've already kind of started to make that transition from, you know, big, long road racing mileage over to more of the small shorty, like, you know, quarter mile, like faster run to some strength training and hanging off of like fun obstacles and things like that. And like just having that reminder that there are other sports within that wheelhouse that I love. And I haven't felt that excitement in a really long time, because I've been knee deep. Not that I absolutely love marathon distance. I love all of that, but it's nice to kind of change it up and remember, you know, why you love all the other things that you love. So it's been fun when I can this week, because kind of got a little derailed with sickness getting out and running. Yesterday was the first day I got back out, and first like mile and a half was good, and then like my lungs were like, nope. So yeah, that's what I'm grateful for. Just being having that ability to have that change up and go back to something else that I'm really happy and excited to do again. So,
Yeah. And now the weather is finally starting to get
oh
better
yeah,
for
so
that and everything.
nice.
So yeah. And then next up is Chris Marino. Welcome back, Chris. Yay.
Hi.
Yeah.
We're laughing because I don't think I heard it. I saw you shaking the cowbell, but I don't think I heard it.
Oh, did I make the noise that time? Oh my God. No?
Ahead, do
Oh,
it again. I think we're quiet.
all right. That's
No.
weird. Because I don't know if you heard the episode. I did my own recap as a spectator and I was ringing it and it was so loud. Maybe because it's on Zoom and I was doing the other one directly in the editor. So maybe that's why. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm not blowing out anybody's eardrum. All right.
That
So I can ring
was
this as loud as I
funny.
want.
Yeah, so I'm grateful for actually health. And what I mean by that is I actually had a appointment with my cardiologist on Friday. And so I had an EKG done and everything's great. So
Yes.
really happy about that. And they shared with me that the office was really inspired by me doing the marathon, which to hear that from your cardiologist, is pretty exciting. So that was on Friday. So that was really great. I was really grateful for that.
Yeah,
That's huge.
that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. It drives me crazy. You hear a lot of people, like when you say you're running, a lot of people more than not say, oh, that's gonna be bad for you, especially after your heart problems or running's bad for your knees. And then everybody comes up with these excuses how running's bad for you, but with the cardio and everything, it probably helped if anything. Yeah, because you did it right. Yeah. That's like great news. That's incredible. So you ready
And a relief.
to
I can't
do an ultra now?
even think about that after doing the marathon.
It's
Still too soon, Paul. It's still too soon.
after a mother has a baby, ask her when she's gonna have the
My
next one.
God.
That's a good analogy. But yeah, I guess we could start from the beginning because a lot of us have never run a marathon before, never mind the Boston. So yeah, I'd like to get the whole experience. Well, first I had like meeting up at the beginning of the race to start, but we could start from the weekend. Did you guys go to the expo? Like what days did you go? What was your experience like for that? So Carrie, you can.
So we so because it was my second Boston, I had done all like the crazy first time Boston stuff the year before. We opted not to go down until the Sunday before the race. So we drove down to Boston on Sunday, drove into the expo, grabbed the bib, which is in a different location than where the normal runners will pick up their bibs because adaptives go to a special room and have
Oh.
everything ready for us. Like we have all kinds of like it's in the same building, it's just the different wing of where we have to go for stuff. So they send you all that information with all the details and stuff for where we have to
Where to
go
go?
and all that. So that was so easy, like it was a breeze. We got there first thing when the expo opened and went in, got the bib, did like a general walk around of the expo, grabbed a couple of photos on the way through, and then kind of like kicked our way out. And we headed over to the north end to see my friend, Catherine Parada, who I used to work with at WGME. She now works down at Fox Boston, down in Boston. So we kind of made it a tradition to go and have lunch and stuff with her when we go down there to race. So it was good to see her and the kids. And then we headed back to the car and headed out to we stayed over in Quincy, so we were even outside of the city from where everything was happening. It's just so much cheaper on the outside of town versus on the inside of town. And we were at the Marriott Copley last year, like the or yeah Marriott last year. So we did everything last year. This year it was kind of just go ahead in and get it done. And that was kind of like the mission with Boston anyways, was to kind of go in and accomplish crossing the finish line. and just absorb it and soak it in. So I didn't want to overexert my body with like walking around Boston and doing all those things. So it was a very much like get what you need and get out and get rested so that you have the best shot the next day to get it done. So my experience at the expo this year was very quick and to the point. It was like in, out, get the stuff and left. And I typically will with like the celebration jacket and that stuff, like I get it online and just have it shipped to my house. And that way I don't have to worry about standing in expo lines and all that stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, a little extra time on your feet and everything that you don't
Yeah.
really need. Plus, it
We
seems like
just
it's one of those things like once you've done it, you've seen all the vendors and stuff before, so it's not really
right.
much else.
Yeah. We did stop at the finish line and we grabbed a couple pictures at the finish line before we headed out. But yeah, we didn't stay for FanFest or do any of the like shops that had like special deals and things like that. Everything that we did walk by, when we walked by it had crazy lines anyways. And I was just like, I don't want to stand in that for to look at merch that I'm probably not gonna buy because I'm cheap and I'm not gonna get it. So yeah, we had a great dinner that night and yeah, and then got to bed like super early, ready to go for the next day.
How about you, Chris? When did you get in? When
First of all,
did you
that's
go?
hearing Carrie's experience with the getting her bib. That's really interesting. I didn't know that. I just learned that from you. That's really cool that they accommodate that. I think that's great. My experience was actually, with the exception of the way I got my bib, my experience was very similar to Carrie's. This is my fourth, very fortunate to say this is my third Boston, so I've experienced the expo. What was a little bit different this time is the last two times prior, my wife came with me to get my wife Katie came with me to get the bib. This time our boys also came, Ryan and Braden, so they got to experience the bib pickup piece at least. It was much different. I don't know what you guys heard. Actually, Paul, you mentioned it in your personal recap. I did listen to that episode. It was a little bit different this year with Bank of America, I think, taking over, in that they the line, the queue line to actually get to your bib was so much different. It was like being in the longest, like sort of Disney ride line, and it just snaked back and forth for what seemed like forever. It moved relatively quick. In fact, the kids and I were saying that if it were just runners, there'd probably be 500 people there, but because they allow everyone, runners plus family members, it just seemed like a mass amount of people. And actually, even the line outside on Boylston to get into the building. So I did it just to back up. We went in on Saturday afternoon because I knew on Sunday I didn't want to do much of anything. So we went in on Saturday. And yeah, just the line was really long. But once we got to the bib area, it was so simple. We just went up to the stand with our number and snapped a couple pictures there with the kids, and we were out the door. I'd also saw online from people's experience, Friday with the expo, that it really wasn't much to see or do. And I can relate from previous experiences. It's just a lot of stuff and a lot of people. And so we actually got out and we had a nice lunch out that afternoon and as a family. And yeah, Saturday I just chilled at home and relaxed on Sunday. So
Yeah, that expo, in comparison to other, world majors, I've done Chicago and I've done New York now, and I would say Boston's probably like the least exciting to go through in terms of what you see. And like if you've been to it, like a Disney expo compared to like the Boston's
I'm just
expo,
going
you
to
are
say that.
severely going to be let down when you go into a Boston's expo. there's not a whole lot going on there, honestly. It's not there's not like a ton of like really interesting vendors. In fact, I don't even know if they had I didn't even look this year. I know last year I had looked to see if I could find like gels and stuff at the expo, and I couldn't find any last year anywhere.
So that wasn't even something that was available to purchase or salt tabs or things like that, which is so weird to me because any other expo that I've ever gone to, like you have the gamut of every single fuel source that you could think of. So it's not anything, in my opinion, to write home about in terms of expos.
Right, yeah, I didn't. There was no gels that I saw. The closest was somebody was selling like special kind of coffee or something like that, some kind of energy coffee. But then that was about it. But yeah, it was a lot of repetitive. So there was probably about like five different like massage devices, you know, because they're all pads now and everything. I mean, they're cool, but there's like so many. You don't need that many, and the
I
ratio
will
is pretty
give
high.
a the hyper spice or the hype whatever the leg compression things are. Those things are legit. I actually have a pair of those that I use on my legs, and those I on the way back from marathon, like had the base of it charged and sat in the back of my friend's car. Liv and her sat in the front, and she drove home, and I sat in the back and like had the leg massage things on the entire way home. Because for me, like with my CP, like the one of the biggest issues, especially like if I go from marathon to like a vehicle or traveling, whatever. My leg locks at some point during the course of the ride home, and like we usually will have to pull off to the side of the road so that I can walk out the Charlie horse because it's so painful. So to have that in the car this time around, and just have like my like legs like getting all that crud and stuff kind of pushed out, was a lifesaver. So those that you've seen at expos and stuff are like. Those are legit. Those are like my best friends ever. Like hands down.
The one that I used on my back, oh, that was so good. Yeah, if it wasn't so pricey, I probably would have gotten it. But yeah, it's definitely good stuff. But yeah, for the expo, I don't think I would really need to go again. It's good to experience it once, you know, unless I'm gonna go see, because they have different panels and speakers and stuff. So, you know, if there was something good going on, I'd probably go just for that or something. But other than that, yeah, it doesn't seem necessary, especially for the runners that are gonna be, you know, running and on their feet all that time. They don't want to be exerting yourselves. So
We had a good
yeah.
time over in the North End though. Like we went over to Bova's. Like that's our like we love going and getting. We did Mike's last year for desserts. This year we went over to Bova's for cannolis and had that as a nice little treat. And then played they have like these like checker boards. That are out in the North End, but like they don't have any of the checker pieces. Like, so you just use like random rocks or bottle caps that you found on the ground. So we like played a couple of games of checkers and stuff over in the North End. And I have to say that was way more exciting than what we did last year. Though Liv would have said Liv enjoyed the Fan Fest last year because there's so much free stuff. And she like just I think she came home with like bags of just like she had like a she got a Poland Springs hoodie. Like all this stuff last year. So she was a little bit bummed that we didn't do the Fan Fest this year, but I was like, we don't need to do it again. We don't need all this stuff.
All right, let's go to race day. All right, so Carrie, what time did you wake up?
So again, adapters are a little bit different than what the regular runner schedules are. So we meet at the Sheraton Hotel in Boston to have take the bus over for like the wheelchairs go and then it's the para athletes and then the adaptives. So I think I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning just to have some coffee and like oatmeal and all the traditional stuff to kind of get into my system and working. And then we left and I think so we absolute the buses were set to leave at 6:30 in the morning from the Sheraton. And when I went to pick up my bib, they were like, you have to be there no later than 5:45 so that they could check you in and make sure everybody was there. So we were I think I rolled up to the Sheraton around 5:30. They had water for us there, coffee, bananas, like the whole gamut of snacks and stuff for us to eat while we were waiting. I
If you've never experienced the adaptive like wave and just like seeing that group of people all together, it is such an incredible thing to witness. Every year that I walk into a race where like I'm in an adaptive wave, and you walk in and you just look and survey around the room the incredible athletes that are there and what they're doing with whatever hand they've been dealt, it's absolutely incredible. You have people that have, no legs, no limbs, like you name it, blind runner, everything under the like it's, and they're all just incredible at what they do. We had the wheelchair division there, the blind, like everything was, everybody was there. We sat around, had our snacks, waited for our buses to be called or for us to go out to the buses. They called us for each wave so that we knew when we were supposed to go, made sure that everybody was there that needed to be there, and walked us out to the buses to make sure that we all got to the buses safely and onto the buses where we needed to be. And then started our drive out to Hopkinton right on time at 6:30. We were in like out of the city and just got to sit back and watch the the
Yeah.
sunrise and all that stuff. So it was a nice peaceful ride over to Hopkinton. Do you want me to go into Runner's Village or
Yeah. Well, yeah, you sent like us you send us a group text of like your nice drive in and everything. And yeah, I can't even imagine how long that must be, because I did like the big longest race I've done was like a 10K that was point to point. So we took the bus just for the 10K, and it just felt like it was forever. So I can't even imagine like a marathon.
Yeah, it
How
feels like
long of a
forever.
drive was it?
I think for us, it ended up being like a little over an hour, because when we got over there, we had to like, I think where we were initially supposed to go to, we ended up having to kind of do like a loop and then kind of like loop back around to where they wanted us to go. So we were on the bus for a little bit longer once we were in Hopkinton. But yeah, I would say a little over an hour we were on the bus for it. But it's so quiet. Like, Chris, I don't know if your experience is the same, but with ours, like our bus is always just, it's very quiet. Like there's a little bit of chatter, but it's just that time everybody's kind of like in themselves and kind of like mentally preparing themselves for what's to come in a couple of hours. And it's very serene. It's very peaceful to be looking out the window and to trying to like process everything that's about to happen and take it all in.
Yeah, so Chris, yeah, so I'm here, your story of were you there nice and early too, or maybe not
So
quite, quite as
again, my experience is a little bit different than Carrie's, because of where I live. I live about 15 or 20 minutes from Hopkinton. So each year that I've done the marathon, I've actually gotten a ride from my house to
right there.
close, right? Exactly. What was a little bit different this year is I got a ride to Hopkinton State Park, and there were buses from Hopkinton State Park to the village, closer to the village. And so I did take a bus ride, but my bus ride was maybe 10 minutes, if that. So it was very short in comparison to Carrie's ride from Boston. And yeah, so my trip in was quite simple, to be honest. It wasn't a lot to it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And,
And I woke up my normal time. Sorry, I know you
oh,
asked.
it's
I woke
okay.
up. Yeah, so my morning is pretty typical. I get up anywhere between 6 and 6:30, like clockwork. And I did get up around then, so I was a little bit spoiled. I wasn't, again, like Carrie, I had to get up at 4:30 or whatever. I was able to get my normal kind of sleep, or as close to it, on the eve of a marathon. It's always a little bit different, but
And then, oh yeah, Carrie, I listened to Allie on the Run podcast, and I was listening to her, pre-Boston. They were talking about when you take the buses, there's no bathrooms on the buses too, so you have to like make sure you go,
Yeah.
before you get on the bus and
Yeah,
everything.
and I mean, we're lucky, like with the Sheridan, like they have, like we have plenty of bathroom options beforehand, and they remind you to go before you get on the bus. But there was a couple of people as we were sitting over in Hofgarten waiting to either like have the bus figure out where they were going. We're just kind of in that standstill that some of them actually asked to get off the bus so that they could go use the bathroom because they had waited too long. And that's always my biggest stressor is like with the bathroom. Like that's always my focus. And like the best race experience I ever had was the year that I ran Star Wars over at Disney World, and it was Star Wars half, and I decided to do like dead last start with the balloon ladies. So I had like the pick of all the porta potties up until the very end when they were sending us off. So it was like, I feel like I have to go to the bathroom again. And like he'd go to the bathroom and get back in line and be like, nope, gotta go. Like that was the best. Like in terms of racing, that like it's probably like my massive, like even like if I only have to go a little bit, like my body is like, you have to go to the bathroom, you have to go to the bathroom, you gotta go now. And it's such a, and once the race starts, I'm fine. All that goes away, but they're like that build up to it, it always sends people panic.
I have kind of a funny bathroom related race story. I did a half marathon in Worcester a bunch of years ago, and they severely under ordered the porta potties. So we were at the starting line, literally waiting to go for whatever the start time was, 8 a.m. And they actually delayed the start of the race because the line for the porta potty was so long. And we're standing there like it's a chipped race. Just start the race for people that they literally delayed it for like 15 minutes because there weren't enough porta potties for folks to use.
It's so like I remember Chicago, there was a ton of people that were like as the race was starting for the waves, like there were people lined up trying to get in and get out. And then when I ran the half at Boston, was it the half marathon? Yeah, when I ran the half at Boston, there were like they were sending people and there was still like a line of people waiting to use the porta potty that were just like going into the porta potty and then literally like running across the start line to start the
That's We
awesome.
could probably do a whole episode on the bathroom
Right?
exploits for race day. A bunch of years ago, around that porta potty story, I always like vowed to myself that whenever I'm going to race, I'm going to just look at it as just another run. And that worked for a bunch of years where I was not so hyper fixated on, oh my God, because physiologically it's a real phenomenon that you experience. Like, oh my God, I got to go, or I'm never going to be able to go again. And it's kind of funny if you really think about it, the number of times you feel like you need to go before a race starts. And then when you start running, I don't know about you, Carrie, but I have no desire to go. Once I start,
Oh yeah, I'm the same way. Like I
like,
can, it's like I'm good. I don't need to. I don't have to
yep.
go. I'm fine. Yeah, I'm the same
People
way.
do though. This Boston, there are people peeling off after like the first mile, hitting trees in Ashland. Like, guys, yeah,
Oh
like literally more than one,
yeah, it was wild out there.
which is kind of funny.
Yeah, there was a bunch that peeled off at the very beginning for our
Yeah.
wave and was just like gonna go.
Yep.
Yeah, probably like nerves and stuff too has something to do with it.
For sure. Yeah.
I mean, even for a 5K, I usually go like 3 times before,
Yeah.
at least before. Like I'll go when I get there's no line, and then I just before the race, I really gotta go and there's like a huge long line.
I even had like a panic moment like right before like they were lighting us up. I was like, I should go again. And I was like, I'm not gonna have enough time to go before they take us out. And I was like, I'll be fine. And then like I was fine. But I had this moment of like, I should go. No, I can't go.
Oh, the funny thing is, like, all us runners understand that. Somebody that's not a runner doesn't get that. All right, yeah. So, yeah, we could talk about, where you're lining up the, what do you call it? My mind just went blank. I lost the word.
Wave. The
Yeah,
waves.
but
The
like
waves.
the where you all get
No, the runner's
together.
village.
Oh,
The
yeah.
village.
Oh yeah, the village first, right? Yeah. So, when you were there, did you see like all the professionals? Were you like all at the same place, or is it how does that work? What's the
So
village like?
the over by us, they have an adaptive tent that is specific for us where the wheelchair division. Or actually, this year, last year, I feel like the wheelchair division was in the same tent as us. This year, they separated us between the adaptives and then the wheelchairs. But yeah, we have our own little area that we can kind of like sit in and get ourselves together. We have our own bathroom area because again, you have visually impaired people and people with various different issues that they're working through. So having access to their own porta potties is something that's really handy to have. It's one less thing that the athletes have to stress about and the guys have to stress about. So our tent was a mixture of, again, the adaptive athletes and some of them that had guides. We had like yoga mats and stuff out so that we could, stretch or do whatever we needed to do to get
Oh,
ourselves
that's cool.
ready and get our, like, especially with some of the adaptives that have like, they have to put on their fins and whatever to be able to run and do all that stuff. So they had those available to us. We had, again, gels were available to us, the Martin gels inside of the tent, coffee and bagels and all that stuff for us, bananas. And we were there. So we were there. We got there around 7:30, ish, a little past 7:30. We waited around until 9:50 is when they took us out to the start line. So basically the elites go, or the wheelchair division goes, and then the elites, and then wave one goes, and then the adaptives are seated right after wave one before wave two comes out. So that we have about 25-ish minutes to kind of get yourself in the right headspace, like for the guides that are guiding visually impaired runners or people that have to have that adjustment period, that time to kind of settle in and no panic, just kind of set your pace where it needs to be and get to whatever side of the road you need to get on before the next wave comes. Because when the next wave comes through, you would better be on, unless like you can maintain, a speedy pace that's going to match what your second wave runners are at, you better be over to one side of the road or the other because they're coming through and they come through fast.
Fast.
Which is pretty overwhelming, but it's like night and day between like New York and Boston. Like, and I've said this before, like my experience with the way that Boston handles their adaptive wave versus the way that New York handles their adaptive wave are two very different stories. Boston has it down to a science, and really makes sure that everybody in that wave is taken care of, is safe, and is where they need to be. Whereas with New York, they have really good setup going into it, but once they drop you into that wave, like you're on your own
They're
and you're
your own.
surrounded by people that are going in a lot of places a lot faster than you are, and that's overwhelming, especially when you're starting on a hill in New York. Because like when you start on that bridge, you're climbing, you're not going net descent, you're ascending. So yeah, it's night and day. Boston's got it down to a perfect science.
That's awesome. Oh, by the way, Corral. Corral was the mystery word I was trying to think
Wow.
of.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that you were next, Chris. So are you like all like in the same area, or is it like totally different areas where you well for the different waves
So
for non-adaptive?
my answer is going to be kind of twofold. Again, my experience is different than Carrie's. And my experience this year was a little bit different than the previous 2 years. So first I'll just give you a brief synopsis of my experience this year. I've been connected with a group who actually had access to indoor space. It's called the Masonic Temple. It's in Hopkinton. It's actually right on 135. It's adjacent to the start line. And what was nice about this was it was an actual, building. So we had bathrooms and a big open space with tables and chairs and couches. And the person who was hosting put on a whole sort of food spread, coffee, bananas, bagels, the typical kind of stuff. So I was not in the village this year because of that. And to be honest, it was amazing compared to being in the village because, you know, you're covered, you were inside, and there's a lot more space to move around. So you can kind of get yourself together a lot easier. I will tell you what the village is like, Paul, just based on my previous two experiences with it. The first year was the first it was October, right, of 21. It was the COVID year, and there were no corrals or waves that year. So when you got to the village, you could get yourself ready, you know, use the bathroom, stretch, whatever you needed to do. And then you could walk to the start line and basically go whenever you were ready. So that was the first year. The second year, which was April of 2022, I was in the village. It's basically, from what I remember, it was just basically a concrete parking lot that was sort of cordoned off with a bunch of porta potties in the middle, and just people trying to get space, trying to stretch, trying to, you know, do whatever they need to do to get ready. And then they would announce the corrals, and then people would sort of march, you know, in groups to the start line. So every one of my experiences has been entirely different, which is kind of funny. The most recent one was my favorite one, but well, actually, I shouldn't say that. When we're at the temple, the Masonic temple this year, we did go down and get into our wave. So we were sort of corralled that way to the start line. But I would the first time I ran Boston, the COVID year, just getting there and being able to go when you were ready was amazing. It was honestly spoiled compared to the way it is now. And I will share one other thing. I don't know what Carrie's experience is like, but when you're walking up to the actual start line, so when you're doing the sort of the march to the start line, the volunteers there are terrific, but they're also very, very strict. They're eyeing everybody's bib, because on your bib it indicates the wave you're in and then the corral within that wave. And so they will tell you, no, you need to go back, if because people will try to start earlier and they inevitably get called back. You can start later, you can't start earlier. So if you have a friend that you want to start with, you can start with whatever corral is like the latest one. You
After.
can't start on the earlier one. And they will send people back. They're pretty hardcore about it. And I've seen people get real Karen-ish, like this year, some people, to coin a phrase, were real Karen-ish about, oh, but I'm with my friend. And they were like, you can't do it. I can't let you go. And they call in reinforcements and prevent people from cheating up closer than they should be. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. And it's really crowded. It's incredibly crowded. You're basically shoulder to shoulder with people before they send you off. And even then, once they send you off, you're still shoulder to shoulder with people for like the first, at least the first half mile, if not a little bit more. So that's my experience with the start.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. You guys can go back and forth now with as far as the race goes. So how was the beginning of the race? Like, yeah, like you said, it was at least a half a mile. Was it even like more than that, really? Because I was at the like just after the 10K mark, and a lot of people were still like shoulder to shoulder all the way through there too. So, but yeah. So we'll start from how was your starts?
So I knew the moment that we stepped outside that it was going to be a very hot race. It was very clear by the fact that there were no clouds in the sky, and it could just felt warm when you walked outside. You know, in my plan had always been at the beginning, like I had had a long conversation with Coach the week before leading into it, because training wasn't nearly where it needed to be this year compared to last year with everything that happened in the past year with Dad and stuff. Like it ever like things just life happened. Like life happens sometimes, and that's you got to roll with it, and you got to be able to accept what you're capable of and follow through if you want to succeed. So my plan from the start was to take it easy. And to just enjoy it, because whether this is, you know, a sabbatical from long distance endurance running for a little bit, or this is it in terms of long distance road racing with having it end in Boston. I want it to be a good experience for me, like to be able to look back on it and be proud of the fact that I finished upright and, I had fun doing it. So having it be warm when I stepped outside and being like, oh, this is going to be one of those races, like your whole my mentality had already been to go slow, and I feel really bad for those that were going for, substantial PRs and things like that, because it was gonna be very down to the science of like when they're taking their, their gels and electrolytes and things like that to be able to maintain whatever pace it was, because the heat was gonna was going it, and it did get a lot of people. Like as a slower runner, like I saw the aftermath of a lot of people struggling on that course. But so for us with the adaptives, we don't have that mile or that march down to the start line like everybody else does. Like our tent really is like right off to the side of where the start is. Like the volunteers check us as we're going through to make sure that our bibs are all accurate. It's got an A on it that says that we're adaptive wave. So before you even leave the tent, they're making sure that the correct people are leaving and are supposed to be there. And then we strung out and are kind of like held back on. So like there was like one gated side that you came out on, and then on the opposite side of it was basically the start line for us. So we kind of did this little tiny loop over into the start, and the way ones went, they filed us in, and probably like 30 seconds later sent us off to go. And like I said, we don't have that shoulder to shoulder feeling until wave two catches us. And so for the slower runners, eventually that's gonna happen. Like eventually you're, like I said before, you're gonna get that second wave that's going to hit. And so really focusing on that first like 25, half an hour, 45 minutes that you have to settle in is really important, because it allows you that chance to kind of like figure out your pace without the panic of trying to keep up with everybody, and kind of just being able to set the tone. So I was able to start off relatively easy, and not going out crazy fast, which was great to not have that panic of going way faster than I was supposed to go. I was able to stick with the plan and set some really good solid intervals. I think I was doing like a 5 minute run to like a 1 minute walk at the start. So like run for 5 minutes and then take that 1 minute to kind of readjust my leg and get my heart rate back to where it needed to be before I would go again. But once wave two caught up to us, intervals were still happening for the next couple of miles. It was just more like when I could take one. So sometimes it would be like I could take one, 7 minutes of running to 1 minute walk, or sometimes it was like 4 minutes of one running to a 1 minute walk, because it's just chaos while those waves are kind of like filtering through. So it's not always really easy to find a place that's easy to pull off without worrying about getting smacked from behind from somebody that's coming up behind you that's going way faster than even if you were running that you were going to go. So I had to practice the Disney, like put my hand up in the air, like so the signal that I was stopping, and making sure that there was nobody behind me before I did it, like trying to remember proper etiquette
While
for
people
all
actually
those
do
things.
that.
So yeah, so for me it was very different than to for that start, at least to kind of like settle in and kind of find something that worked. But my heart rate was already really high, like from the moment we left Hopkinton, like it was already gonna be one of those races where I couldn't maintain like a steady progression of my heart rate. Like my heart rate jumped, and that's where it pretty much stayed for the entire race. Like it was able to come down a little bit as I slowed down, but it would jump right back up once I start running again. And I think a lot of that has to do with the heat and just how my body reacts to that kind of weather, especially coming off of winter in the Northeast and like training in the winter months to something that is way warmer than something that we're used to. So a little bit different.
Yeah, Chris, did you have that same experience? Like, did you know that as soon as you got outside that it was going to be a toasty one and make things difficult?
For sure. I didn't, I wouldn't say I obsessed over the weather with like the week leading up to it, because there are a lot of people that really do obsess over the weather. I'm not one of those people, but I did check it periodically, and it definitely got my nerves going, with the run up, because I've done a couple different marathons in heat and in really hot temperatures, and it's absolutely brutal. And it may not seem like, look at the weather and 60, 65, sunny, may not seem like a big deal. If you're looking at the weather, oh, that's a beautiful day. I think for the spectators, it was a beautiful day. But my general rule of thumb, something that I read years ago, is you always add 20 degrees. Like when you're dressing for a run, you always add 20 degrees to the temperature. So you take a 60, 65 day and add 20 degrees to that, 80, 85 is, it's going to be hot. So yeah, to answer your question, Paul, I knew when we were waiting to go and when we started to walk to the start line that it wasn't going to be a great day. I wasn't particularly worried when I started, but it was running in the back of my mind that this is probably going to be a tough one. And I think similar to Carrie, my plan, I think I've always had sort of approached this marathon with two plans, right? One was just to finish. That was the overarching goal for me, just finish. Don't up end up in a medical tent. Don't, God forbid, have something horribly go wrong. Just finish. And the second one was, I did train up to 20 miles, and my 20-mile run went fantastic. I kept a very steady pace and just felt amazing after it. And so in the back of my mind is like, okay, well, if I can do that for 20, like my training run, then the last six will be a little bit of a wild card, but I'll get through it and everything will be okay. Obviously, that just completely fell apart on this particular day. When I did my 20-mile training run, it was much cooler. I started when I wanted. It was completely up to me and my doing. This is, the time we start, the temp, the weather, all of that is completely out of our control on marathon day. So my plan B was tossed out the window about halfway through the marathon. Yeah, and it is very, very, for those that have not experienced it, the very start of the race is kind of, you've just got to pick your spot and just kind of go with the flow. That's really all you can do. There are folks that will run on either side. Really, the main one is the left side because there's a sidewalk and a little bit of like a there's some dirt kind of off the road, that there will be some folks in Italy that are flying up the side of that to try to get out of the crowds. But if you're in the road, in the crowd, it really is just, it's congested and you're not going to get anywhere. And in fact, you're going to waste so much energy trying to snake through that crowd. You're better to just maintain and just kind of go with the flow. And eventually things do open up pretty nicely, but the very beginning is very, very tight. And you can actually really, you could get hurt. I mean, you could step, or you could hurt somebody else. You could step on somebody's heel. You could twist an ankle pretty easily. You've got to be smart about the beginning of Boston, really.
What's it like at the beginning? Like, are you do you ha get stuck like walking for the very beginning of it? Because I've done some like big 5Ks, and sometimes we're like walking the first quarter of a mile because it's so congested and nobody can move. It's like so jam packed. What's it like at the marathon? Do maybe they move a little bit faster, so it's like a jog or something. What's that like?
No, they're running.
They're
Oh, okay.
running.
Yeah.
Yep. And not that I'm a lightning fast runner by any stretch of the imagination, but you're the crowd dictates the pace for that first part. So whatever your plan is for the first mile is you're not gonna get there. Unless you're planning on doing a 11 or 12 minute mile, let's say. But yeah, the crowd really does dictate the pace for the very beginning of the race.
Yeah.
Which,
So how long is it like that? Like these was like a half mile, mile, or maybe even longer.
I wasn't really paying it. I would say, like, I don't have this mark, but I would say it's at least the first half to three quarters of a mile that it's like that.
Yeah, for both of you. Yeah.
And it is even after that, you know, it for the maybe up to 2 miles, it is pretty crowded, but you do get more breathing room, you know, as you get further along into Ashland, you do get more breathing room for sure. But it is that very beginning is very, very tight.
Yeah, it's intense. And for the slower runners, like it'll come in waves. Like you'll have like that intensity of the wave coming through, and then it kind of like opens up a little bit, and then like if the next wave catches you, it will like you'll feel that intensity again. So on my end of things, it would like I think when I caught up with you, Paul, it was just starting to maybe thin out a little bit. Enough for me to be like, okay, I can breathe again. But it wasn't long before like another like wave of runners would come through and kind of like take over again. But eventually it does like filter out a little bit so that you feel like you can kind of like set your tone. It's so hard too because with the crowds that are there, like for
Was
the
gonna ask that next,
spectators, like
what you
it
thought of the
that's the other
crowds.
part of it. Like, you know, like it's so hard to not get caught up in the rush of it, like because it's so loud and it's they're every like spectators are everywhere. Like they just line the streets and there's other than the first couple of miles, like it's constant. Like it is just it's constant, like rows deep of people, you know, shouting your name, cheering you on. And so that can really fuel that intensity even more about of how fast you go. And so it really does take being able to kind of look at your big picture and having a little bit of restraint to back it off and be like, all right, this is what my plan is. I have to stick to it. Or else it's gonna the wheels are gonna fall off. The wheels could fall off anyways, like no matter like best laid plans that you have, like you could still like have the wheels fall off. You know, like much like Chris, like I trained up to 20 miles, my 20 miles. And again, it was slower this year than it had been the year before because of everything that's been going on. But it was a lot cooler when I did my 20 miles at home than when I did my like the marathon. So even that mentality of, well, I trained up to 20 miles, I can suffer through a 10K. That's if that's all that I have left, I can get through it. It becomes exponentially harder when you're dealing with, you know, those kind of conditions. And like in a lot of those cases, you're shooting yourself in the foot if you are not strict with your intake from the get-go. Like if you miss something that you're supposed to take in terms of fuel or, you know, water or Gatorade or whatever it is that you're using to fuel yourself through that race, if you miss one way back at the beginning, that can like derail you further down the line, and you're not going to know it until you hit that wall,
So you
and
hit
it hits hard when it goes from I feel great, I feel awesome, this is like I'm having the best race ever, like I don't need to take that, like or I'll just wait a couple more minutes before I take that fuel, and then everything's fine until you hit like mile 15 or whatever it is, and you're like, uh-oh. Or in this case, like there were people that were hitting their wall at like mile 8 and having issues. Like I saw runners already off the road at mile 8 that were sick, or cramping early and those things because they had gone out way too hot at the beginning or didn't fuel right in that very first section. And that especially going into the Newton Hills in that whole area, that's a game of fire. Like it's just you're playing with fire at that point. So, no, I think, you know, training wise, one of the most like physically, obviously, you want to get yourself to be able to run X amount of miles and know that you can do it. But learning what your body needs in order to get you there and how your body handles those miles, because like I hit a wall at various points along the course. So I know not to panic. Like I know that typically around mile like 9, 10, I have like a mini wall that I usually hit where I'm just like feeling really sluggish, and like then I'll get over it and I'm fine until like mile 14 or 15. And then I hit another like mini wall and then I get over that. And then I hit a really usually a bigger kind of mental hurdle wall around 18 or 19. And I know that once I get on the backside of 22, that I'm fine and I can get through it. But I've learned that from the training that I've done. So I know my body, I know where those moments are, and I know how to fuel myself appropriately to keep myself going. So I think training, as much as the distance is important, it's learning what your body needs and how your body reacts to those distances along the way.
I think that's very true, with the exception of a hot day like Marathon Monday, because yeah, I mean, my experience was, I did really the first half of it, I felt great. I was cruising along, doing my pace, doing what I set out to do, and fueling and hydrating with what I thought I needed. And then I hit like mile 14 or so, and just it was like, it wasn't a bonk, because I've definitely bonked before, but it was like my quads just started to seize up. And I've had this experience before. And in fact, the first year that I did Boston, it happened pretty much at the exact same location on the course, which when it happened this past time, I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. I was like looking at my watch and I'm like, it's mile 14 and a half. This is insane that this is starting. And then I was like, okay, well, here we go. This is what it's about. And yeah, so I mean, my the experience for me of the second half of that run was quite different than the first half. It was tough. But I would echo what Carrie said. I don't remember seeing folks down at mile 8, but definitely after like mile 10, 11, and all along the way, the rest of the way, people were out, dropping out, going into medical tents. And I had a couple moments during the race where, again, I was just so focused on, okay, I've just got to get into Boston. I just have to get into Boston. Whether I run, walk, or crawl, I am going to get into Boston. Fortunately, I didn't have to crawl. I was able to do a combination of running and walking, but it was tough. It was a tough day. There's no question about it. It was also a beautiful day. It was like a joyous day. I want to share one story while I'm thinking of it. My wife and boys were at mile 3.5 in Ashland. My neighbors, Augie and Jess Mello, were also there, good friends of ours. But what was really special was the folks, the house where I had the heart attack, the family of the person who passed away the night before that I had my heart attack. I don't know if you guys remember that story. The granddaughter who connected with Katie and shared her grandfather's story of his passing, her mother, and her mother were there at mile 3, and it was beautiful. It was maybe one of the most special moments I've ever had in any race that I've ever done. The fact that they came out to support me, and in addition to that, sorry, Steph, her name is Stephanie, the granddaughter, and in addition to that, her boyfriend Scott was also there, and he's the one that actually called 911. So. And I saw other people. I saw Paul. It was really exciting. But maybe we'll talk more about that as we go. But I did want to share that that story of the beginning of the race, seeing them at mile 3.5.
That's
That's such
amazing.
a boost to just everything for the starting the race to have that. That's incredible.
Yeah,
It
you weren't
absolutely
expecting
is.
them to be there either, right?
I was expecting them to
All
be
right.
there, actually. They shared with me that they were going to be there.
All
It wasn't a
good.
surprise. So I knew that. So yeah, to Carrie's
That's
point, it
dope.
is the fuel. I knew, like, once we started, and you know where people sort of are going to be, and so you are anticipating that. The crowds are amazing. for sure, but it's so different when you see a familiar
Oh
face.
my God, yeah.
It really is, it gets you to that next point. Like, I knew at mile 3.5, I was going to see my family and I was going to see the Mellows and I was going to see Stephanie and Rebecca, her mom, and Scott. I knew that I was going to see them. So it was like I just like floated to that spot, you know? And then it's okay, who am I going to see next, you know? And that's one of the best parts of the marathon is being able to see familiar faces.
Yeah.
Because it really is, I've said it before, it's fuel. It's fuel unlike any food or hydration you take. It really gives you that boost. It's almost inexplicable. It really is a beautiful thing.
It pulls you out of whatever headspace you're in, you know, it allows you that opportunity to get out of wherever you've put yourself into and kind of reset yourself, and the endorphins and everything hit you. Because I know when I saw Paul, like I was just like, I see Paul. I was like, give him the biggest, like, wettest hug. Cause like I'd been like dousing myself in water like from the get-go. I think it was like one cup of water to drink and one cup of water over the head to like keep myself cool. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm gonna get you soaking wet. But it was such a boost to see him and just had to just reset and be like, all right, like we can do this. Like I can go and I can carry on. And to see Olivia and everybody along the way is it's huge. And you know, a lot of those people have been supporting you throughout your training, you know, up to like prior to that. Like they all know what you've been going through, and to see them there and to see like the smiles on their faces and how proud they are of you, that you like you're doing it, and you and like giving you words of encouragement is really so valuable to have as a runner, because like we go to dark places in our heads all the time, like and we get really down on ourselves in the moment, and you know it can, you know, the pain cave or whatever it is that you're going through. So to have the support of the people that you love around you, kind of able to pull you out of that and remind you that it's going to be okay, and that you have people that are proud of you and they believe in you more than you believe in yourself at whatever moment you're at, is a game changer for sure.
Absolutely. We've got my wife and I have this system now, because she, the 3 times that I've done it, will her and the boys will, you know, be in Ashland, then they'll make their way to Wellesley, and then they make their way to Newton, and then they get to the finish. And we've got this orange flag. It's like on a white stick. It goes in like this guy that says, it's like a green plastic thing you put in the street when little kids are playing, right? That says slow down or whatever. So we take that flag out and my wife holds it and kind of waves it around where they are. And I generally know where they're going to be based on the mileage. So for example, coming into Wellesley, I knew they'd be at mile 14. And I can see that flag from like half a mile away. And you want to talk
Oh,
about
man.
a beacon in the night? It's the most incredible feeling knowing, okay, I'm going to get right there. I know exactly where they are. I don't have to worry about finding them or them finding me. And it's really amazing. And it amazes me that not more people sort of do that sort of thing. I've seen like balloons and like face cutouts and things like that, but this orange flag is such a, it's, I don't know, it's a thing that's worked for us. And probably shouldn't share that secret, because now there'll probably be a bunch of
You can see
orange
all
flags.
of
But
it.
yeah. So
Oh, it's even better than
Right.
the
Ah.
sitco sign.
sign's pretty great too, because you
That's a
know
thing of
you
beauty,
cross
man. When you see that sign, oh my God, that is like such a boost, man. When you like finally see it, you're like, okay, like we are there.
that.
We can make it. We're
Yeah.
almost there.
And I did something different this year. Personally, I did not use headphones. I think I used them for a mile. I had them with me, but I didn't use headphones. And I do every training one with either music or podcast, because I'm typically running by myself. And I didn't use the headphones this time. And boy, oh boy, I enjoyed the experience so much more. And I'm convinced that I saw more people that I knew because I could hear them shouting my name. I saw a guy I went to high school with that I know on Facebook a little bit, and I wear glasses, obviously, and I didn't have them on the course. So I hear him yelling my name, and I can see him. And I was like, oh my God, oh, his name was on the tip of my tongue. And sure enough, half a mile past, I'm like, oh, that's Eric. I was like, because I didn't have my glasses on. But just being able to hear him shout my name was awesome. Like, I haven't had that experience in a race before because I was had the music going, you know? So I was really thankful that I made that choice. I did wear them for like maybe a mile, and I wanted to take them right out. I'm like, this is not serving any purpose for me right now. So
Yeah, I'm.
highly recommend doing it without doing Boston specifically without headphones.
Yeah, I did it without
Such amazing.
headphones this time. I had them, and I think I used them maybe for like intermittently for 5 minutes here or there. But I was the same with you for this one. I kept them out for the majority of the race, and I found that, you know, it was so much more enjoyable because you were able to interact with everybody on course. You could hear, like, you know, the college kids joking around with you, or like, you know, just like being able to interact on a different level with them. And like that, at one point, I like had veered off to the other side of the road to go into the med tent to get some Biofreeze on my leg, and one of the college kids on the other side was like, "Carrie, I see you over there. Where are you going? Come back over the like." Then, like, you can just joke around with them, and so it is such a and like I said, I've said this before with Boston, like those crowds are just incredible, and it's such a rush. Like, it's just it is constant, and it's, you know, just the support, and like you really don't have to bring anything on that course other than like what gels you usually use, or whatever like you fuel with, because if you need pickle juice, if you need a popsicle, if you need whatever it is, that somebody's gonna have it on course for you. Like they've got you, they got you covered from start to end. Those
What's the
popsicles.
Biofreeze do for you?
It just takes, so my biggest issue that I have with my left leg in the deeper miles is that it starts to, like, I'll start to have cramping in my hamstring, and it basically kind of like vices around my knee, and it makes it really hard to bend. So the Biofreeze will freeze the muscle in that leg so that it's not progressing anymore, so that I can figure out how to like get it to a point where I can move it again. Or like, so towards the end for me, it's usually a combination of Biofreeze for the last 3 or 4 miles, and salt tabs are the only way that I usually can get through to the finish line. And that's like, even like with peak training, there's something about miles like 23 to 26 that no matter what I do, something with my leg just, it tightens. Like, I don't know if the hamstrings just like we're done and like we've had enough, because my CP, like my hamstring is already like extremely tight. So like I can walk fairly normal, but if I were to lift my leg up, I can't lift it nearly as high as I can on the right side, and I can't bend it the way that I can on the right side. So as those miles get more and more deep into it, those muscles just like get really, really tight. So the Biofreeze gives that muscle a chance to kind of freeze and relax for a second for me to keep on going and basically get me to the end.
I think I need to look into that. I had a couple things going on for me. One, my legs, again, after like sort of mile 15, felt like two giant Charlie horses.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, I originally thought it was cramping, but I wouldn't necessarily say it was cramping. It was more like they were just ache, like really ache, and I could not run on them for more than, gosh, 10 yards maybe without them starting to seize up again.
Yeah,
It was
that's what it's like.
horrible. Yeah. And then the other thing is I had knee surgery back in 2018. I had some cartilage repaired and my knee will tighten up almost like a rubber band. And that's when you said the Biofreeze, I was wondering about that. And it does that. It's been doing it lately after, excuse me, it's been doing that post marathon more just with walking. I've gone on a couple runs and it's been okay, but if I walk more than 5 miles, it tightens up it's almost like the tightest rubber band, and I have to very slowly sort of bend at the knee joint to loosen it up to the point where it's not so tight. And I actually was just talking to my wife this weekend about going back and doing some PT on it because I'm a little bit worried about it. And but yeah, the BioFreeze is interesting to me. I need to do more research on that. And I wish I did that before the marathon. I'm wondering now if that might have helped with some of the pain I was having.
Yeah, it's a lifesaver. I ran up to the med tent and they're like, "Where do you want it?" And I was like, "And like the hamstring and on the knee." Because with me, I can tell. I've done enough marathons to know now like what that feeling is. And I can like the moment I feel the twinge in the back of my knee, I'm just like, "Okay, like here we go. This is where like the struggle it really is going to start." And I know that it's going to be hard managing it for whatever is left of the race. I have found ways with the BioFreeze and the salt tabs to alleviate a little bit of it so that it doesn't completely incapacitate me. Like in Chicago, when I ran Chicago, it hit early. Like I want to say I was like 14. I was having an awesome race in Chicago until mile 14. And then like it seized and it locked from probably 14 until 22. And the only thing that was able to keep me moving was that BioFreeze. Like there was like no amount of pickle juice or anything that was like unlocking it. It was like consistent, just BioFreeze on it. Since then, like I've kind of learned how to bring it out a little bit more with how I'm taking in my electrolytes and just knowing that when that point hits, and I know that like there's no turning back from it, that BioFreeze and sucking on salt tabs. Like I had like a packet of salt tabs, and like for the last 3 miles, I would pop one and just suck on it from, and each mile I would just take on another one, and it was enough to keep that tightening enough for me to cross the finish line. I didn't really start to really feel it until I took the final turn onto Boylston, and then there was a couple of because I was sprinting at that point, like towards the finish, because you're like, I made it to the finish, like I can see it, like so you start running a little bit faster, and in that case for me at that point it was like my leg was like, nope, we're still having issues. Like we're still like you still need to take your time on it. So there's actually a couple of photos of me that are like trying to unhook my leg so that I can keep on running. But yeah, the med tent, it was like, where do you want it? And I was like on the hamstring, and they were able to like massage it into the muscle so that it really like absorbed into where it needed to be and was enough to just keep me moving forward to do intervals. Like, because if I didn't have it, I would have been walking the rest of that course. Like, so to be able to have those intervals to stay consistent was huge for me. And I cramped. It's the same point with me. Like, I think I hit the back end of the Newton Hills, and it was almost like clockwork for me as well, Chris, where like at the exact same place that like things started to really derail was the same place last year that things had started to derail. It was like the moment I had like reached the peak of one of those hills, it like I could feel it coming on, and I was like, well, here we go. Like we're in the thick of it now. And I train on hills. Like all around me, there is no place where I live that you are not climbing up 1,000 feet of elevation to get home. Like you go down and then you like this 1,000 feet back up in any direction. So it's just something about that course that just completely throws me for a whack.
I completely agree. I've said the same exact words. There's something about that course. I think it's the net downhill at the beginning, and it gets you. And yeah, it was tough. It was really a tough day. I mean, it was a joyous day for me in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it's like I didn't want to feel the way that I felt finishing it. I really was hoping that I would feel good. So, anyways, it is what it is. It's in the rear view mirror now.
And you finish and you cross, right? And like that's the big part of it is that you didn't end up in the med tent, you know, like you didn't, you know, have to derail for or be like you didn't faint, you didn't have to walk off course because you couldn't finish it. You were able to get across the finish line. I was really proud that I crossed the finish line and I didn't like pass out on the other side of it, which I know a lot of runners were coming over that line and then just completely just passing out the moment they crossed. It was wild watching some of the video back. I was just like, wow, this is intense.
It's so true. I saw the same thing, and I actually had a I had a scary episode. I made my way, same group that hosted at the beginning had an after party near the finish line, and so I, you know, I finished, walked through, got my medal, got my snack bag, made got my way to the after party. We were checking into this after party, and we were standing there, and I remember feeling like, holy crap, like I've got to sit down. And we're in the lobby of this hotel or of the lobby area of a big conference room and or a ballroom, I should say. And I literally sat down on the floor and just broke out into this cold sweat and turned white. And my wife was there and she's like, do you want me to get a medical person? And I didn't think it was a heart thing at all. I just think it was what I had just gone through. But for whatever reason, it didn't happen on the course. It happened, you know, 15 minutes later in indoors. And after maybe 5 or 6 minutes, it did pass. And I was got up and I ate and I felt great after I ate. So I think it was, you know, a culmination of all of it, you know, the late start, the heat, and then just doing nothing but goos or gels and Gatorade for 5 hours, 5.5 hours, you know, took its toll.
Yeah, man, that
But
is.
after that, I was fine. It was literally like a 5-minute episode.
Yep, I hit that point for me was after the race is over too. So I looked at Olivia and my friend Megan, and I had said, you know, my cell phone's probably gonna die at some point during the course of this race because it always the battery was on it, it's been going for a while, and. If my music was playing, I knew it wasn't going to last, or just messages and stuff that people were sending. And so I was like, can we find a place that we can meet just so that I don't have to stress about it? So we figured we would meet at Arlington Station and be able to get on the T there and go to North Station where the car was parked. It was like, perfect. Like, I'll see you at Arlington. And we didn't factor in that the barricades were up for spectators, so we wouldn't be able to get to where they needed to go. So I had gone through and went to get my medal, got my bag, went to the bathroom, did all those things, and had made my way to Arlington. And I ended up waiting another half an hour to 40 minutes for them to pop up over in Arlington just because they had to navigate through the city. And I would say probably like 15 to 20 minutes into it, I started to feel terrible. Like between the wind that had kicked up that was coming down Boylston, being soaking wet because of all the water that like you had dumped on yourself, the Mylar wasn't cutting it at that point, and just all the goos and Gatorade and everything that you had consumed on course definitely had gotten up to me. And I had to sit down and just be like, just take a second to breathe through this and make sure that I'm okay. And again, it passed like within 5 minutes of happening, but I had the same experience. And I think it's because like your body is just going through so much and you're pushing all of your pain receptors to the side and like all the warning signs that like your body's throwing at you during the course of that marathon, and you're just pushing it aside, like, nope, we're gonna keep on pushing through. Your adrenaline's gonna carry you through, and then eventually everything catches up with you, and you're just like, oh, like all that stuff that I was pushing off to the side is now going to flood you within. Because that happened to me at Jimmy Fun when I walked the Jimmy Fun course the very first time. I had that moment of like, I think it was like 15 or 20 minutes later, I got sick afterwards. And just like all that adrenaline had like caught up with me and it hit me. So yeah, I think we're really good about kind of like pushing everything to the side and being like, we'll deal with you later just to finish. And then like once everything calms down and that adrenaline's worn off. Your body's just like, hey, by the way.
Time to pay up.
That's I've never I hadn't even considered that since Marathon Day, that yeah, it was disappointing the way that the race went, right? But the fact that we didn't falter on the course, that we actually finished the course, because so many did have that experience on the course and either struggled to the end or weren't a, had a DNF, weren't able to finish at all, right? So there is something to be said about having that experience at the conclusion of it versus during it. It's like our bodies knew, okay, just got to get to this point. And maybe it's a mental thing, right? That you build it up and you're just got to get to that finish line. And as soon as you get to the finish line, your body's like, okay,
We're gonna feel it all
Done.
now.
It's that's there's some I think there's something to that. I had not considered that before, you know, that the body, the mind was durable enough to get you through to get to that end goal. And then once it figured out that you had done that and you were done, it's like, okay, now I'm going to give you a little bit in return. I'm going to show you who the real boss is.
We're gonna
But,
go through all the pain now.
yeah, exactly.
well, it's kind of like going through a traumatic event, or even in the military, you're going through battle, your adrenaline's carrying you through, and then once everything settles down, then your body just like gives out. Yeah. So that's the first thing I thought of, Chris, when you were talking about that. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy what the body can do, but yeah, they got you
Yeah, and the
through.
mind, I think of
Yeah.
I think a lot of it's the mind too, the way they interact with each other during, even like you said, Paula, you know, stressful, you're in battle. I mean, yeah, I can't relate to that personally, but I can only imagine what that must be like. And so, yeah, it was pretty dramatic, but also so joyous too after, right? It was like, wow, like I actually did this thing. I was just so happy that I was able to do it, you
Yeah, you
know.
get so thankful to, you know, like when you put it in perspective, like beyond like race goals and whatever else it has, like being able, like when you at the end of the day, when you look back at it and you're just like, I did this, like I accomplished something that a lot of people have never accomplished ever in their lives, and I've done it with all of these things. Like I haven't let this pile of crap over here that has been happening to me define who I am. Like I've made who I am, and that I can do what I have set out to be, you know.
And what was also nice too is, you know, today's day and age with, you know, connectivity and people being able to track. And I mean, I crossed the finish line and I had like 70 text messages. I had never had that many text messages in my life of people like congratulating me, and it was amazing. It was just, you know, it felt really good to know that there were people out there that were interested enough to track and then to send a note after saying, I saw you finished, you know, and it's just like I was really proud of myself in that moment and thankful for all the people in my life that cared enough to do that, to send those notes. And so
Yeah, it's a boost to, you know, like I had coach had was following me and tracking me throughout the course of the race, and definitely at the end was like, you're almost there, like you just need to like to get a couple more turns and you'll be at the finish line. So it's almost like he's on your shoulder, like guiding you to the finish. And then you know, my friend Megan always sends me all kinds of really funny memes on the course to keep me laughing and
That's
going.
awesome.
And you know, she makes them all up. They're all like Shine Down music-based references and things like that, which is really cool of her to do, to spend the time to do that. And you know, to send them intermittently throughout the course, knowing where I am, and having those memes be related to wherever it is on the course that I am at, is really cool. And again, just like all the congratulations. You know, I had people on Clint's Discord that had, were watching the entire thing, and like talking and chatting about where we were at because John ran the race too. So they were tracking both of us on that day, and just to see all those messages of them talking back and forth with each other about like how we were doing and like being excited and how proud they were was really cool to read back and see. So like that support again is so huge.
Those are the best messages. Like I had a two separate groups of friends who I was in their group chat, and they were keeping each other appraised of like my status. And yeah, it makes me emotional thinking about it because
Yeah.
it's like that kind of stuff is what really makes you want to keep going. You know, you're accountable, you feel accountable to other people in a lot of ways. And it's amazing. Like to know that there are people out there that are like, oh my God, he just crossed the 15K mark, or you know, whatever is happening. It's like, yeah, I did. I just did. Pretty neat. I
That
know.
was me. I did
'Cause in a lot of ways, like you do it, it can, even though there's so many people out there, it does feel, when you're in it, it feels very, it can feel very lonely, especially when you're in pain. And so again, seeing familiar faces, seeing texts from people, those are the things that make you feel less alone and that you're not, you know, because you can go to real dark places. I mean, I was like at mile 18 or 19, and I was like, I am never doing another marathon again as long as I live. This is ridiculous. I don't know what I was thinking. This is the worst idea I have literally ever had in my life. That's on one shoulder, right? On the other shoulder is like, just get to the finish line. Shut up and get to the finish line. This is the worst idea you've ever had. Why would you ever do this?
It's so
So you go
true.
to really dark places. Yeah, right? It's, and then you wake up the next day, and I didn't want to see any marathon stuff. I was like, I didn't want to see anything about people's marathons because I was happy that I finished, but I was also a little bit sad in how it went. And then a couple of days you kind of ease into it, start reading things. Oh, I'm not the only one that had that experience. I'm not the only one that completely derailed at mile 14. Oh, this person didn't finish, or that person didn't even get to finish, and they're disappointed, and they flew from Japan and they didn't finish. And so you eventually come back around where it's like, okay, what I did was cool. And you know what? I am going to do that again. Never mind what I thought about at mile 18 that day. I'm
It's
totally going
so
to do it
true.
again. It's
Mile
crazy.
18 is a dark place, man. Mile 18. I hate mile 18 to 20. It's just not good for me at all. It's always where I'm just like, this is terrible. I'm never doing this. I called my best friend at New York at mile 18, and I was like, I am done. I want to walk off this course. And she's like, you will hate yourself if you walk off that course. And I was like, I don't care. And she's like, if you walk off that course, I am going to kill you. And I was like, okay. She's like, put Seven Dust on and just do it, because you know you want to, you know you're going to do it, and you'll be disappointed in yourself or not, but like that, it's real. Like you just get into that headspace of just like, this is terrible. You know, you're looking around and everybody around you looks like they're running just so effortlessly and just like gliding along, and like you're the only one that's in pain. And you know you're not the only one in pain. You know that everybody is suffering as much as you are, but like when the perception is that like everybody else is fine and I'm just over here like on the struggle bus, like everybody's on the struggle bus at mile 18, like it's mile 18.
You just happened to see the people that were in their running interval, not their walking interval. And then if you saw them a couple minutes later, they'd be walking. Yeah, it's pretty nuts. I do think, yeah, you get to mile 20 and you realize, holy crap, there's still 10K to go. There's still another 6.2 to go. And that's where the mind
Right, exactly. I was just gonna
games
say
come into play, right? You start thinking, oh boy. Well, they always say the marathon is like a 20-mile sort of jog, right? And the real marathon is the last 10K. It's the last 6.2. Because we've all
100%.
trained at 20 and you know you can get to 20. But what happens from 20 to 26.2? That's the real mystery. It just so happens on this particular day because of the heat that started a little bit earlier for a lot of us.
Yeah, that's
Yeah. But
There were a lot of people that had to drop out, or people
yeah.
hospitalized and everything because of the heat. Yeah, which might sound funny for some people because it was like in the mid-70s, but when you're running, like Chris mentioned, your body temperature goes up like 20 degrees, and yeah, and there was no clouds or anything. It was just the sun beating down on you. It could have been like 50 or 60 degrees out with the sun like that. It really gets to you. Yeah. So
Yeah, there
yeah,
was no
double.
coverage. There was no coverage. There virtually might have been two spots of maybe 50 feet where there was a little bit of shade. But other than that, and I remember very distinctly every time I looked at my watch, I guess the sun was sort of behind me, because every time I looked at my watch, it was like the sun was bouncing off it. It just was relentless. It was the entire day. It just didn't stop. And I don't think any amount of Gatorade or water is gonna cure that. At least for me, it didn't. It may even have the opposite effect, because I think I got to a point where I was probably
Too
drinking
much.
too much fluids, and it started to
Yeah, I think that's
flush
where
my
it's
body of, right.
the water at the end, I think, definitely started. And like Gatorade is already something that I have to be really careful with, because the later miles, it usually starts to make me feel pretty nauseous. So like it's very strategic how much of it I'm drinking. And I've tried Tailwind, I've tried a bunch of different like hydration things, and I just haven't been able to find something that's better than Gatorade. And with Boston, it's hard because like you can't wear a vest. You have to kind of run with whatever it is that you can carry on your belt or whatever. So it's not like you can pack stuff like bottles in and have everything ready to go. So you're kind of left to whatever is out there for the majority of especially those back end miles. And Gatorade just like they gave you the Gatorade tablets in the bag, and I handed them to Liv, and I was like, you can have these, because like the even looking at these right now is turning my stomach
Oh, and one thing I just wanted to mention too, I forgot to mention on the last episode I did about my spectator. If you're a spectator at the marathon, and I know these aren't runners that do this, but for example, there was somebody, let's call her Karen, just aimlessly walking across the street as runners are like running, and they're like almost tripping over her, and that really screws up your timing and everything. And so then she's just like all confused. All she was doing was crossing the street, not for any purpose or anything. And then other people saw her doing it, and so then they started crossing too. Meanwhile, those runners coming, and yeah. So I want to advise against that for any spectators, anybody that goes to any race. Don't walk in front of the runners, please. Even when you're on for a regular run, just things can really screw up if like a car is coming and stuff, and really messes up your run. So never mind a marathon like
That
that.
happened in New York a lot. There was a lot of people that were crossing the street, and New York was super congested in parts of that course, but there were so many people that were like crossing, and it's one thing at the beginning of the race, everybody's going really fast and like setting their pace. But towards the end, again, like all we're out of it. Like we're in our headspace, we're trying to focus on propelling our bodies to the finish line. And so we're not as aware of everything that's going on around us as we should be. And so you're in a position where you're gonna get, struck by one of the runners by accident, or you're gonna hurt one of the runners that are coming through as they don't see you, or is it their aim is off on, like they might misstep once, or God forbid if they misstep and twist their ankle or whatever because their muscles are just fatigued. And
Right, especially at that point.
yeah, I mean, those are all very real things that can happen. I don't think people truly understand that, like just the wear and tear that marathon does to your body as you're progressing into those deeper miles, and how easy it becomes to just one little roll, one little off move, and it can tear something, it can sprain something. It's very real. I've seen it happen.
I wonder, Carrie, because my experience with Boston, it sounds maybe like what you saw, Paul, was a bit of an anomaly, because my experience with Boston has just been clear sailing, and that the spectators are very respectful of the runners. I wonder, Carrie, if your experience compared to New York. Is it different in New York than Boston, would you say? Or
Oh
is it
yeah.
just, oh, okay. It's
Yeah, it's
interesting.
different. I New York also, I think, is there's way more runners on that course than in Boston. I think that they take more on for one. But there are parts of New York that you're literally like, even in the deep, like 15, 16 miles in, that you are still shoulder and shoulder with people because the pathways that they have are so tight for the runners to go through, and the crowds are packed on either side. And they'll like the spectators will look for a moment to just cross the street. And it's just like, there's no place for any of us to go. And if I stop, all the runners that are around me are going to collide into me, and they're going to collide into you. And there, like, there's some volunteering that is happening where they're making sure that's not happening, but there's a lot of places on New York's course that like that it's just a free for all of people going back and forth.
There is a spot, Carrie, maybe you remember this in Boston, or maybe there's a couple of them, where it must be near train stops, like in Brighton or Brookline, where they actually will have volunteers in the middle of the road, and they'll cordon off half of the road and direct runners to the other half. So and then they, so they bunch the spectators that are trying to cross this road into the that part that's cordoned off, and then they opened up that cordoned off area and get the people, and then they cordon off the other half and get the people across. It's pretty slick how they actually manage the crowds there, because it is a city, and you know there's people trying to get around, you know, with their daily activities, even though there's a marathon happening. So the way that the volunteers are able to manage those crowds like that, I don't know. I always am very impressed. I mean, the volunteers in general, I think at
They're
Boston are just
incredible.
incredible. I mean, they're amazing. They're so, I mean, just thoughtful and, you know, kind to the runners. And it's just, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah,
It really
they're
is.
incredible for what they do from the very moment that you enter, even to the expo, and you know you're getting your bib and stuff, like to the moment that you are, you know, exiting the race as a whole. From start to finish, the volunteers really do make that race what it is for us runners to be able to do what we do, because you know, support wise, they're helping you wherever it is that you need it, with water, with medic, whatever it is that you like, directions, whatever it is, you know, pointing you in the direction that you need to go. They really are the backbone of what makes Boston Boston, and for what we can do.
Totally.
They're so kind, and they're always smiling, which is like the best thing, to be able to like have people smiling and cheering you on and all
Yep.
that. So
Every water station, I mean, it's just, it really is, it's incredible. I think the best job though are the people that get to put the medals on. I think those are the best positions.
I this most stressful job like was probably the medics that were right over the finish line, because they have to watch as like you're coming across and seeing like your face as you're crossing, and then like for the ones that like cross and then you see like all the color drain from their faces, and you have to run out and grab them before they smack their head on the pavement. Like I saw a lot of just like on the ball, like run out, grab somebody in a wheelchair and wheel them off to
They're super dialed into that. I saw a bunch of those videos too. In fact, I saw a really funny one where this woman crossed and she was like about to collapse onto the ground and the medic was there, but you see her stop her watch. And it's like,
That's hilarious.
I didn't comment on the video. I was like, muscle memory is so real. It's like you're about to die, but it won't stop you from saving your activity on the crowd.
One second before I pass out. Yeah, I saw one that came across the finish line that I'm hoping that she still qualified for her star. She was going for her star was they had carried her across the finish line, and like two guys had carried her physically, so her legs weren't on the ground. And I know there was discussion going on of whether or not that was going to count against her or not, if they were going to allow her to be a finisher, because one of the reasons why you see a lot of people like holding you up with your legs kind of like flimsily like hitting the ground to cross the finish line is because you physically have to walk, or like your body has to propel you across that finish line. So I'm hoping for the ones that the kind souls that were just being nice and carrying people across the finish line, that those will still count because
Yeah.
that's
Do you
rough.
know if you're aided across the finish line with your feet on the ground? Does that still count as a finish?
Yeah. So if your feet
Oh,
are on the
gotcha.
ground, it's a finish. If they carried you, like if your legs are not on the ground and they're carrying you across, it does not count as a finish, or it's not
I see.
supposed to.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that's disappointing if you made it 26.1 or something, even more, right? And you.
My friend Megan was saying that there was one runner that collapsed in the final like 0.1 or whatever it was, and the medic went over there and the lady was like
Leave me alone.
and
What? Give me a minute.
right and so like the medic kind of just like strolled along next to her as she would like take a couple of steps and then like wooze over to the gate, and like she made it across, but she was like, do not touch me. I am going to do this.
That's amazing.
Excellent.
Good stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I guess we should start wrapping up. And so, yeah, we could do this 22 too many for this is like a short one, I think. For any new listeners, 22 too many is an awesome organization that brings awareness and remembrance to veterans who die of suicide, and they support prevention as well. The 22 stands for the number of veterans who die from suicide each day, and the reports don't even take into consideration the drug overdoses or accidents that weren't really accidents. So you can follow 22too many.org. That's the numbers 22 and then too many.org. I'll also add the link in the show notes. All right, so this week it's Dirk Dastrup. He's from the US Air Force, March 22nd, 1999 to July 29th, 2021. And Dirk was an active duty airman stationed at Herbert. Oh my God, I can't speak. Hurlburt Fields in the Florida Panhandle. Dirk was born and raised in Benson, Arizona, and he had a heart of gold. His passion was always to rescue others. He always had an ear for his friends' troubles. He loved the ocean. He had no problem swimming at 11 o'clock at night. He was learning to snorkel and scuba dive while stationed in Florida. His heart still belonged in the desert. He loved bath bombs. He had a dream to serve veteran families with a package of bath bombs to honor their service. Mom is following by taking up his cause, Dirk's Dream Bath Bombs, CO. Oh, that's interesting. All right, man, maybe I'll put a link up to that. Dirk suffered with depression caused by military regulations. He was receiving counseling and medication, but to no avail. It wasn't any source of help. Dirk was 22 years old. He left behind his mom, his stepfather, his six siblings, and his father. His radiant smile, dreams, and love are so truly missed. So it goes up to Dirk. Yeah, sounds like he had good plans and everything too. It's so sad. But all right, so we can like end on a good note because I want to ask both of you, does it ever get old turning on Boylston Street?
Never, never. It's,
You still got that same excitement as the first
oh
time.
my God, like it's so overwhelming. It is so overwhelming and it's amazing all in one breath. Like, I can't even describe those terms in a way that you would really understand it. That first turn you take on Hereford is like the emotions start for me. Like I always like get choked up when I take that turn. And then I'm able to compose, like there's always really ugly crying pictures, like right as you take that turn onto Boylston of me, like, because like I'm trying to compose myself and be like, all right, like that first wave is good. Like I can, we're gonna like push to the finish. And but it's just the roar of the crowd. Like if there was like a sound that you could bottle up,
in your head or bottle up to have with you when you're in your deepest, darkest moments of your life. That sound from Boylston would be one of those sounds that I would want to listen to pull myself out of it because it's just incredible.
Wow. I don't know if I can follow that. That was
That
really well put.
was
What I would add to that is I feel when I'm making that turn, I feel so incredibly fortunate to be able to be there. Boston is just such, even though you're cursing it and you forgive the previous 26 miles and what you went through when you're on Boylston, it really is the most incredible moment. Not only the crowd and the experience of that, but it's also finishing something that you set out to accomplish and reaching that goal, because I don't think people recognize that, the marathon really is a celebration of all the work that you put into to that particular day. And so being from New England, we're going out when it's freezing cold or snowing or raining or doesn't matter or whatever's going on in our lives. So it's really a celebration of all of that work that you put into that moment. And then realizing I'm going to be able to stop and I'm going to be able to eat and I'm going to be able to relax for the next couple of days. It's just a culmination of all of that. It's just an incredible moment to celebrate. And so I never take that for granted. I enjoy every step of that. So that's my experience at Boylston.
Yeah, 100%. It is a celebration. It's such a momentous part of the marathon journey, and just being able to be like, I did this. Like I did it. I got myself through the 18, 20, however long week training run through all the different weather that we had and all the different life events that happened, and I did it. And this is the reward, right? This is what we've planned for. This is that moment. But yeah, man, it's nothing like you could ever dream of until you're in it. Like it's incredible. It's worth it. The
I was going to say
training and
you could
everything is worth
argue.
it.
I was going to say that you can argue that that moment makes every minute of the struggle with training and all of it, makes it worth it. It makes you want to go back and do it again,
Yep,
for
100%.
sure.
I love it. Congratulations to you both. I'm proud of both of you. And both truly inspiring. That's why you're getting all these text messages from everybody. You're making them proud and inspiring them. So yeah, there's a reason. So yeah, I'm so happy for both of you.
Thanks, Paul.
And Maurice too. So unfortunately Maurice couldn't join us today, but yeah, so
He
we've
ran
been
in that
up.
suit the entire. Is
He had
that
a purple
like,
suit on.
is it breathable? Because I saw pictures of it and I was like, how did he not die? Like if I could have stripped off all of my clothes, I would have
You all got hugs from me, and you all had the same amount of wetness. But yeah, his yeah, I'm surprised because it looks like it's like a real suit, but yeah, it's breathable, it's light and everything. So yeah, but I think last year when I saw him, it was like cooler out and rain, and so it was like all buttoned up. This time, I say he had it like unbuttoned and stuff. But yeah,
I don't
it
know
was
if I would have.
incredible.
Funny story. I've never met Maurice. I only know Maurice through your podcast episode that I listened to with him, which was great. I actually saw him on mile at mile 18 or so. I saw the purple suit and I introduced myself and I said, "Hey, I'm friends with Paul and Carrie. And my name's Chris Marino, and I was on an episode and I don't think he knew me from a hole in the wall. He was like, "Yeah, man, just keep going." I'm like, "Me too."
You got
But if it
this.
weren't for the purple suit, I probably wouldn't have recognized him or seen him. So that was pretty cool. Whether he remembers that or not is to be determined. I was hoping today to be able to share that with him, but anyways, maybe he'll hear this.
We'll have him back on, but we all are in a group text, but that's like on text, that's not like video or anything. So yeah, she hadn't actually like seen him in person. So
I was wondering, that was my question for him, was how did you survive in the purple suit?
that's dedication. That's dedication.
But still, I mean, it was like long sleeves and everything in that heat with that sun. Even though it was light, I mean, it's still covering you. Yeah, you want to like take everything off.
I was so like, I had moments where I was just like, I just want to take my tank top off and like I just like I don't want to wear any clothes right now. I'm so hot and uncomfortable.
Carrie, you want to tell people where they can reach you?
Yep. So you can reach me on Instagram at running underscore with underscore the underscore rock star on Instagram, or Every Run Has a Story on Facebook. And then photography stuff is Carrie Nelson Media on Instagram.
Awesome. And Chris, how about you? Do you still have your charity page open and everything?
It is still open. Yep. Hashtag B as in Braden fights ALD. We'll get you there.
Awesome. And I'm happy to announce that finally we have the website up, inspiringjourneys.net. So .com was taken, but I have .net, and we have all the podcasts up on there and show notes and everything. I'm going to keep building that up. So it's exciting. I wanted to get it up, so it's up now. And then it's on Inspiring Journeys Pod on Instagram. And you can also find Inspiring Journeys on Facebook. I think if you look for Inspiring Journeys podcast, it'll pop up. So, yeah, I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you guys again for coming on and sharing your story. I think I feel like it's interesting to people that haven't run or haven't been in the Boston, doing hear your inside information. So that's very cool. So thank you for sharing that. That's so awesome.
Thanks,
Making us
Paul.
feel like we were there.
Yeah.
So,
Congratulations, Carrie.
congratulations to you, Chris. That's
Thank
awesome.
you.
Hopefully, we'll see each other again at the next Boston.
Yep, for sure. That'd be great. Looking
Oh,
forward to it.
I should also mention, I should keep mentioning every episode, I'm going to be doing the Gatsby Days 5K on June 8th.
Hey.
That's local here in Warwick, Rhode Island. So if anybody's around, and even if you don't run it, there's a parade there, so you can go watch the parade. It's on June 8th this year, so come join the fun.
And for anybody that's looking to qualify for Boston this year, I think you have until like September 10th or 13th, I think, to get your qualifying time in. So if Boston is on the plan, keep that in mind for marathons that you're looking out for, that you make sure that you do it in the early part of September, as your cutoff date for it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, thank you for that info. Yeah, because there's certain races that count towards it.
Yeah, there's specific races that are Boston qualifying races, which you can find if you do a Google search for Boston qualifier races, it'll pop up. But just make sure that it's on the early part of September that you're getting it done by if you're trying to qualify for 2025.
All right. Thank you, everybody. And feel free to share. And thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
And remember,
be excellent to each other. And party on, dudes!